Type Radio.
Now we are about where you want.
Radio Dan.
This is
Type Radio.
Now we are about where you want.
Radio
Dan. Type Radio.
Now we're talking.
TypeRadio.org. Broadcasting from Tipo Berlin, 2004.
You also said, like, probably, or sort of doubting with the religious question.
I said that, yes.
Mm. Is that but when it comes to deadlines, probably, you start praying?
No. Deadlines have nothing to do with religion.
Yeah, I think so too.
No.
Believing in them, I mean, it sort of has.
I
would say intellectually, no. But emotionally, yes, sometimes.
That's really That's bad.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
but it's quite a good answer.
No, well, okay. I thought a bit there'd be like a sort of a spiritual reason or whatever, but
I think what he aims at is that he probably is not, and but it's kind of ingrained in by upbringing.
I had some education, and it's part of me. Can't deny it. Simply like
don't
this.
Don't cry.
Okay,
but you're not answering with yes or no.
Oh, no,
now
it's allowed.
No, it's okay. The 30 questions are over. There were like a little more, I think 32, but we're finished now. That you can say whatever you want now.
Yeah.
So, I have like a very stupid question to start the whole thing. Because I always thought it was line two. Mm-hmm. And like it's like a number of people came up to me and said, yeah, Lineto this and Lineto. And so like all these different pronunciations. So what is it? Like, explain.
Okay. It's your name. You're gonna explain it.
Well, it's line two. Line two is a Postgre command. Comes from this programming.
Move to, curve two.
Exactly. So that's where it comes from.
Okay.
But it's easier, especially in Germany, to say Lineto, because otherwise all the people ask, line two. How you spell this? So it's easier to say Lineto.
And also, like, you sort of suspect an Italian Lineto.
Lineto.
It's on the way to Lineto.
Exactly.
It could be a town in Tuscany or something. What is it? How is it like to run a foundry, actually? And who's the boss? And how does it go about? And what are the negative, positive sides to it?
Well. I mean, you know what it's like, right? You have one.
I don't.
That's them. That's
some
us.
People.
Ah, you're not.
I'm a type designer, but I don't sell them personally.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I mean, this is not our business, so we run it on the side. Everybody on line two is their own kind of designer, art director, whatever, in their own right, and they have their own work. And what's on line two is simply a kind of a selection of works that we kind of know and like of other designers. There is no boss, really. It's Stefan and I who started the whole thing, and we kind of, I don't know. I mean, earlier in the lecture, we coined the phrase a typographic salon. So that's what it is, really. Like,
but
a kind of, I don't know, yes.
What's the criteria? I mean, who do
the criteria is us.
So
if we like it,
you sign.
If you really like the person,
I don't know. Sometimes that helps, yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it kind of grew from people that we knew that were around us, that we knew that had fun sitting around on their hard disk, and that we liked. That we kind of was a shared attitude. I don't know. Who did kind of maybe similar things, but in a different way, or there was kind of a similar vibe going, and it's pretty, I mean, it's a small group. It's now it's maybe 10, 12, 14 people.
16,
is
yeah,
it?
But
it's I mean, we know everybody.
Oh, 15. It's
and we, I mean, some of them we've known for a very long time. That doesn't mean that I don't know, maybe that's going to change, but we want to keep it small. We like to compare line two to like a small bookshop, like an art bookshop, rather than a Barnes & Noble or like a, you know, a big chain store. So, you know, you're going to find something which somebody picked and chose and know why it's there, rather than lots of stuff.
How important is your website for marketing?
It's totally important. I mean, we don't really have a marketing policy anyway. We haven't really done any marketing at all whatsoever, unless, I mean, if you count this as a marketing thing. And we have made very, very few live appearances, maybe one 5 years ago.
Almost terrible.
I mean, Linto wouldn't exist without a website. We did fonts before, and then there was a moment where we thought, okay, well, we could do this ourselves. So we started it and then kind of grew from there. And now we've just finished a new website a couple of weeks ago, which went online. So it's very important for us, yeah. I mean, that's what it is. And it helps us kind of deal with that side in a fairly organized way. You know, it's just something which runs itself on the side, and we're busy with other things.
So you consider yourselves like primarily graphic designers and secondary like
absolutely.
Yeah,
type
absolutely.
Designers, and thirdly
absolutely.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm a. I don't know. I don't really see myself as a type designer. I mean, I know a lot of things about type, but I don't know a lot of things about type. So, I make the types that I can do, and these I make available to other people once I don't use them anymore or I've done them.
I think also back to the first question. Well, it is really important that this webpage is the first webpage where we really have implemented also the other designers. We gave them something like a platform to
show their
stuff. They
have their own space that they can
do
whatever they want.
They didn't have it before.
And that's kind of important to us.
Very important.
And the fonts really live in the context of the work of the designers and need to be seen as such. And I don't know, I mean, I think our fonts are kind of limited in some ways, maybe. But that's that's also the beauty of it. Because there's a lot of type already out there. So,
when you say limited, what do you...
Limited in their appeal, limited in their usability for some people, limited in, I don't know, the level of perfection that they've done. If I look at, you know, some of the more crazy people who really, really, really...
Type designers.
Do the proper
But you
proper
wouldn't
thing.
Speak to the, one
Are
of the designers and then
Sorry?
Say, oh, could you improve that? Because that's... a problem in that area or no?
No, I think I very much see it as making my own tools and I try to make them as much as good as I can for myself. And they're good if they're good enough for myself, they're usually good enough for somebody else.
I think that's how we started.
Yeah. And
this was one of the
reasons. I mean, of course, you always can go back to your own work 5 years later and you can see the limitations and you can see the mistakes. But you know, we try our best and you have to draw the point somewhere. So.
What type of designers do you have on your wish list? Are like you have some people in mind who are not in your foundry yet, and you want them?
Not somebody we know. I mean, there's definitely somebody on the wish list that we don't know yet, that we haven't heard
of. Course,
do you say no a lot of times to people?
Well, I mean, funny enough that we see interesting things and we. And then we can approach them, But I mean, naturally. But usually it's better to find something rather than to be approached. I mean, it's nice to be approached by somebody who's really good, but usually you find out somehow anyway. And very often it's just a version of something else. But I don't know. I don't want to sound too negative because I don't really want to put off people. I mean, because it's easy to say, well, it's
No. That's true.
You get to see a lot of crap.
Yeah. What does it mean? I mean,
it's always interesting. You know, I mean, it's interesting if somebody comes up with a dot metric font in 2004, and thinks there is a chance of
number 12,001.
No, but. You know what I mean? I mean, I still think it's interesting. We have to see.
There's like... What?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Noise.
There's like a sort of a Swiss style, you could say, a sort of a gridded geometrical style.
In our fonts?
Well, generally, but also in your fonts and your designs. Why is that, you think? Why is that Swiss style sort of recognizable and a little bit alike? You can sort of tell when it's Swiss.
It's like with Dutch design, I think. Don't know from where it comes exactly, but...
If you look
at the handwriting, for example, of Dutch people, I think...
But house industries, like Ken Barker, is like...
Is what?
He's like... It's also handwriting. He does a lot of handwriting.
Yeah, but that's American, I mean.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's not typically Dutch to do handwriting.
What do you think is Dutch design?
And underwear is like Finnish,
but the
German.
Kind of handwriting.
Okay, yeah. Oh, the kind, yeah. Yeah. But you think there's like a specific Dutch way of...
Of course.
Definitely.
Yeah. What is it that you... What do you think?
Really, I can't explain it.
Well, no, you can't.
You can look at the forms, yeah.
Element, there's handwriting in there, there's a very high level of expertise.
Yes, they know exactly what they do.
It's also very, it's always very mannered at the same time, it's over laborious, and in my view, I don't know.
But would you
decorative in a way?
But would you disagree with my I'm just making a statement on Swiss design here. But
I think that's good. I think it's very interesting that we live in a place where you drive 300 kilometers and then people speak French and then they have a totally different, you know, then they're into decorative shapes and.
But do you agree with it being
alike? Well, it's called culture. I mean, it's like, you know, what you grew up with, and you know whether you like it or not. That's I don't know. That's what you grew up with, and you react to it in a certain way, or you kind of fight against it, or you use it for your own advantages. But it's certainly something. I don't know. I mean, you can't blame an American for being American.
You know. No, well, there's no question of guilt or anything
actually,
here, but
can.
It's like you can actually wrong example.
No, but you know what I mean. I mean,
it's
part of your heritage. It's part of your, you know, it's a legacy. It's your history as well, and you can deny that. But it's something. I mean, I don't know. You grow up.
It's there.
You grow up in a certain kind of way. Maybe now with with mass media being much more. Dominant, and with people probably now growing up, yeah, I don't know, if somebody's like 5 or 10 years old now, they'll probably have a much more mixed kind of, you know, I don't know, you know, you have this kind of more generic kind of culture which it relies on the same codes for everybody, and you know, because Europe is becoming one market, so it becomes a little bit closer together.
So you think that it probably will change in many years?
I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen, but maybe also the opposite will happen, that people will be more aware of
separate
of what's theirs and what's unique about...
It's an identity question.
You know, about your language or about your whatever. Your culture.
Yeah.
Your upbringing, your history, etc., etc.
Who did design Helvetic?
Meeting him.
Yes.
And
did you know
what it was called before? Because it originally...
Haskell.
Yeah. You should have known.
No, of course.
You're Swiss.
It's a funny detail, because we have one font online too, which actually was designed by the nephew?
The nephew, yeah.
He was the nephew of Max Meeting. And
this
it
brown
was a,
font.
It was
is
a
that
cool
you're marketing it like that? This is the nephew. Oh,
no.
Well,
no.
Well, the thing is, it was a done.
It's only one line.
Okay.
It was a font done in the 1970s for a brewery, and what they based it on Helvetica, and it was done in the studio of Max Media, I think. Yeah. And they kind of did a blurred rounded version of Helvetica, but which is still very geometric, which is kind of strange, and it feels very strange. But it was a font which was everywhere, like every restaurant was kind of inscribed in that typeface. And in the early 90s, this brewery was bought out by, I don't know, Heineken or no, I think it was Carlsberg, like a big international brewery. So now they've taken all the signs down; it's disappearing. And one of the group of designers which is online to kind of preserve that font before it kind of went away, and they wanted to use it on a project, and went actually to find out who did the font, and then found out that it was this guy Pierre Meedinger, who's the nephew, and hooked up with him, and he was first totally against the idea of digitizing a typeface and making it available, and thinking that it was kind of spread around, etc., etc. But in the end, he was persuaded, and He gave them original drawings, like, you know, the perfect ink drawings, etc., etc. And Electrosmog, who are the designers on our foundry, digitized it and kind of completed it into a full font set, etc., etc., together with him. So that's kind of a nice story to have a part of your history revisited and
But Matthew Carter, because he actually met Max Biedinger himself, and he said he was originally not a type designer.
Probably not.
Yeah, but he sold fonts for Haas, and like he went around with like the boxes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what he did. And he had some graphic background, and then he started like he was asked by Haas like. Make something like that, and then sort of has the whole, you know, the rest of the story.
I mean, there are a number of great fonts from Haas, from that foundry around, which are actually extinct. And I don't know who owns them. Somebody owns them, but they're gone. And there's a number of interesting type designers in Switzerland, apart from the, you know, the ones that we mention all the time, which is Frutiger, etc., etc. I mean, there's Hermann Eidenbenz, who did the Clarendon font, etc. So there, you know, this is quite a rich. There's more to Swiss graphic design than just the Helvetica.
Well, thanks very much
for this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.